Hello, everyone. You're listening to Record of Change Season 2. My name is Stephanie Rabel, and I'm your host for this episode. Record of Change listens to stories of individuals from across the world to hear how their lives are being impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. We listen to our interviewees at several points in time, as we're eager to hear about how their lives are changing. Today, I'm speaking to you from Delaware, a state in the Mid-Atlantic region of the United States. This episode was recorded in the thick of the holiday season, with Thanksgiving being this week. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, has advised the country against all holiday travel this season to avoid the spread of COVID-19. Many are staying home, many are seeing extended family with the support of testing and being cautious, and others are throwing caution to the wind due to feeling exhausted and isolated from loved ones. Today, we'll hear more from Mackenzie Roller, an 18-year-old from Connecticut, which is in the Northeast, who is taking a gap year between college and high school in order to work with organizations she feels do impactful things. We're catching her at the end of almost a three-month stay in Wilmington, North Carolina, where she's been working with Vote.org, a national nonpartisan organization that helps register and inform eligible voters from across the country. In this episode, we will talk to her about her impressions of living in the American South. She will share her exciting experiences of working with Vote.org leading up to the presidential election. She'll shed some light on what it's like to grow up during a time of political division in the United States. And she'll let us into her holiday plans and where we'll find her next. But first, if you like our show, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform and check out our website, recordofchange.com, for more information on our team and all of our guests. So now let's hear from Mackenzie. So Mackenzie, hi, welcome. I can imagine the last few months have been really interesting. Last time we spoke, you had just moved to North Carolina. You were, I think, the next day going to start your new internship at Vote.org. And so we're now about 2 months past that point. What's life been like over the last couple months?
I can't believe it's been 2 months. I feel like time has passed so weird between just being in a new place, living on my own, and adjusting to a different work schedule, things like that. Like, time has flown by. Like, I couldn't tell you that October even happened. But things have been really good. I've been learning a lot about myself, about, like, the elections, about Wilmington, where I'm living. Been meeting a lot of people and trying to form some real connections, which has been incredible. And that's what makes it hard to leave a place, right? So today's actually my last day in Wilmington, which is, I can't believe that already happened. So that's it, hard to leave, is those connections that you formed and things like that. So life has been good. I'm happy to say that it's hard for me to leave, because that means my time here was meaningful. Been feeling like I'm doing some meaningful work through Vote.org and through the nonprofit that I've been working with in Wilmington. Grateful to have this opportunity to be on this gap year and doing this work, because not sure what it would be like at school right now.
You were mentioning something about figuring things out about yourself. So as an 18-year-old who's living independently for the first time and your experience in Wilmington, North Carolina, can you tell me a little bit about what that's like in terms of what have you been learning about yourself?
I can be somewhere new or trying somewhere new and figure it out and that it'll be okay. And like, new is not bad or scary. I mean, it can be a little bit scary, but like, I'll figure it out. And that's something I think I've been learning since like the beginning of COVID, honestly, when things kept changing day to day and just rolling with it and figuring out what's next. But really being on my own and in a new place with like having to reform community and things like that, knowing that I can do it, that makes me more confident, I think, in who I am and my ability to face change. I think that's been huge. I realized what a bubble I grew up in too. Like, I have never really spent any like much meaningful time outside of Connecticut where I grew up, and grew up in a small town, went to a small school for high school. I went to boarding school, so I met people from all over the world, but just realizing how small my bubble was and being in a new place, meeting new people, having conversations with everyone I meet, realizing that my walk of life is just so completely different than everyone else's. And that's not like a bad thing. It's just understanding And I think I knew that intellectually, but just like having real personal connections with people from completely different walks of life, that's been super eye-opening too.
I feel like based on our conversation last time, that sounded like that was actually one of your goals in this year, that you wanted to open up your perspective. So thinking back to even the winter time, you really wanted to do an abroad gap year. Right. And when that seemed to close, this came up. And so it's interesting that you get to feel like you're learning so much within your own country. Can you talk a little bit about things like friendships and the people that you've met while in Wilmington?
Yeah. So I think first within the United States, there's so much difference. Every place you go is going to be different. Culturally, there are going to be similarities between where you're from and where you're living, but there's always going to be differences. So that's been eye-opening too. Like, you don't have to leave the country to get any perspective or learn something new. But in my time here, some of my closest relationships are with my roommates, who I got really lucky to be with them. I didn't meet them until I got here, and they've been amazing. They're two juniors at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Just, like, I have the best time with them. So that was really just lucky, and they're great friends and people. Other than that, like, I joined a CrossFit gym, and one of the coaches, she was like, want to go to church with me one day? And I was like, I'm not super religious, so thank you. And she was like, no, you could still come. And I was like, okay, I'll go with you. My family is Christian, but religion's never been a huge part of my life. And we went to church that day and then went out to brunch after, and we stayed super connected. She's like 50, but we were like friends. We connected over church in a way that's never happened in my life before. Church is completely different here than like in Connecticut. There's just a much bigger population of people that goes to church on a regular basis here, at least from what I've experienced here. That's been great. Like, I spent a lot of time with an activist, and she was incredible. Like, she let me basically follow her around and just learn from her in every space she was in. And I have learned so much from her about what like actual community-led leadership looks like and community-led change and what it means to work within the community to create some real lasting, sustainable change that the community needs, not that someone else thinks they need. So these are all like incredible relationships that I am really lucky to have formed. And some of them are just like personal friendships. Some of them were, I was learning tons of like actual tangible things. I learn a lot from everyone, but yeah, I was really lucky to meet such amazing people here.
I think it's so interesting. We happen to catch you on both sides of this Wilmington experience. I feel like it's such a lucky perspective to document your time here, especially on your last day. You were there for the purpose of working with Vote.org. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah. So I joined Vote.org just about a month before November 3rd, so Election Day in the United States. Vote.org is an online tech-based company that supports voters in ensuring that they have the right to vote and access to vote. So what we were doing at that point was making sure as many people were registered to vote as possible, making sure that people knew how to vote, because COVID has made some things weird in the United States about what polling stations were going to look like, because you have the option to vote in person, you have the option to vote by mail. And in some states, you can only vote by mail if you have like a valid excuse, like not being in the state or the country or something at the time of the election. And only some states would allow you to use COVID-19 as an excuse. Like, it depended state to state, because states each have their own laws around elections and how that exactly happens. Yeah, we did a lot of Plan Your Vote campaigns. And then also, Vote.org specifically focuses on reaching hard-to-reach voters. So voters that don't necessarily vote as consistently as other groups of people, or face more barriers to vote than other groups of people. That means young people and people of color are the main targets of Vote.org to make sure that they have access to voting and making their voice heard in the elections. There are a couple partnerships and programs that we were running to reach those voters. Like, we started a WhatsApp bot in Spanish that people could text to figure out how to register to vote and things like that, to make sure that people who spoke Spanish also had access to the same tools and resources. We had food trucks out to like give people food and to also be there with the voter hotline number on it, because sometimes there's voter suppression and intimidation that happens in poll lines, so making sure that that number is available to people if they needed to ever call. So those were like some of the things we're doing. There's so much more. Like, this program, it's a small team of people, but running so many programs across the country, it was incredible. I don't remember what our numbers were, but we reached millions and millions of voters for this election, and that made a difference, which is so cool. We had the largest voter turnout in the United States that we've had in over 100 years, like since before women could vote. We had over 66% of eligible voters in the United States vote this year, which is unheard of in recent elections, which is so exciting because democracy only works when everyone's voice is heard and when everyone's voice can be heard. So 66 is still not the ideal number, but that's way higher than it's been in the United States in years, which is incredible. So everyone at vote.org works remotely. We work across the country from our homes and things like that. So what I was doing, I would help write the newsletter that went out to donors. I would help keep some websites up to date, do some research for what strategy we should be using, like who we should be targeting, things like that. I helped specifically with an electionday.org initiative where vote.org was getting companies to sign on to guarantee paid time off to vote to employees, because one of the biggest reasons that people don't vote is because they feel like they're going to lose part of their paycheck to take off the time to go vote. So a big way to increase voter turnout is to have bigger, like, companies guarantee that their employees will still get paid while they're at the polls to vote, and encouraging that. So I helped a lot with that, and like which companies will be the most impactful to get to sign on. Going up to November 3rd, it was go, 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 go all the time. And it was impressive about how many different programs and things each of the people on the team was running.
Can you tell us any stories that helped to illustrate some of the meaningful work? Are there any stories that stick out to you about this time?
So electionday.org was a campaign to get those companies to sign on to give guaranteed paid time off to their employees to vote. The goal had been set to get 1,000 companies to sign on by Election Day. And the Friday before the Tuesday that the election was happening, we were at 800 something companies, and we were like, we're not going to make it. This is so frustrating. We're going to get so close and we're not going to reach 1,000. And we sent out one final push to our network, and I'm the one that updates all the companies online. And I woke up Monday morning and there were so many form submissions, and I was like, this is amazing, but like now it's time to sort through it all. And I was sitting in the car because I was on a road trip that day, and sitting in the car on my computer going through each company, because you got to make sure that they're a real company submitted by someone who has the authority to submit it, submitted with like actual company policy. You have to make sure that they actually meet the criteria. And I was sitting in the car going through all of these, finally updated the website, and we were at like 1,031 companies, and I got to send that in the group messaging, and that was so exciting. And like the excitement from my colleagues who have been working on this for months was amazing. They, like, it was literally like election eve. Like, it was the night before the election and we finally hit that goal. When we put the numbers together, as many as 1.8 million employees were impacted by that campaign, which is just so incredible. And that moment was awesome. Sitting in the car, we reached 1,000 companies. Like, we did it literally hours before Election Day. So Election Day was interesting because the programs were all building up to Election Day, and Election Day was like, let's just make sure everything runs smoothly, because the programs were building up to that moment.
And so just to remind everyone, you're not originally from North Carolina. You're originally from Connecticut.
Yes.
How did you vote this year?
Yeah, so I voted by mail. I voted absentee in Connecticut because I wasn't in the state at the time of the elections. You had to request an absentee ballot. The ballot gets sent to you. You fill it out and you send it back, which is what a lot of people ended up doing this year because of COVID. So that's what I ended up doing. It was interesting for me too, because one of the things vote.org works on is making sure that everyone has access to all of these different things. And Connecticut is one of the states where you're required to actually print out a form online and fill it out and send it in. So I had to find a printer because I didn't have a printer. Luckily, my apartment complex office does that we can use. I had to find a printer. I had to find stamps. None of the supermarkets here had stamps, which I was like, that's what? Not good. And yes. And I had to go buy envelopes. So I spent like $15 and had to find a printer. And luckily, I have access to those things. But I was like, I know that there are so many people that wouldn't ever be able to do this, that barrier to vote. This is why I'm working with vote.org. This is why this is happening. Some states, like luckily in Connecticut, that's only for the absentee ballots. Some states still do that for registering to vote. Like, you have to print a form out to even register to vote. The systems need to be updated, and everything should be able to be done online. That makes it easier and more accessible to everyone. There are barriers to do that, and it takes time, but that was an experience for sure. And I was like, this is why this work is meaningful, because I had barriers to voting, and I had access to a lot of resources, and still had the challenge to actually be able to vote this year.
So yeah, it was incredibly tricky this year, but I think it was actually really successful, because if you figure the voter turnout was so impressive. I know folks that are listening from other countries are probably thinking 66% is not anything to speak of, because there are some countries that require all registered voters to vote. You are currently living in a state that was very up in the air, it's a purple state, but especially for an international audience, they're looking from outside and they see a lot of chaos. They see a lot of polarization within the country, a lot of division. Can you speak to that? Is that something that you witnessed?
Absolutely. And coming from Connecticut, Connecticut goes blue every year. So it goes to the Democratic Party every single year in the election. There's not as much of that polarization felt necessarily in my immediate connections there, and coming here and being surrounded by people who, like, it is purple. So you're living with people who, some people voted for Trump, some people voted for Biden, some people didn't vote. And, like, it's all right next to each other instead of being, like, separated into little bubbles in Connecticut. I felt like here it's, like, in your face. Wilmington is super divided itself. Like, downtown, there was a big Wilmington for Trump billboard right next to, like, signs for, like, vote for Biden. And even in my own personal interactions, when someone would say, like, oh, I'm voting for Trump or I'm voting for Biden, the mood changes in the room. And I was having conversations about that with people. It's never been like that, really, in any other election in the United States. Like, there are some people that still consider it rude to ask who you're voting for. And so it's really weird that in this election, people were so willing to share and ask, because people see it, I think, as a defining piece of who you are right now. Like, this election, who you voted for, people are viewing it with weight. Like, what are your morals is kind of what some people are viewing this election as, holding that weight, which creates polarization. If you think that someone's voting against your morals or, like, against what you value as, like, basic human traits and not just, like, how to handle taxes, like, if you think that that's something on the ballot, that's going to create polarization. And that's kind of what this election felt like. People put a lot of meaning into what your vote said about who you are as a person this year. Right or wrong, I think that happened this year, and it was clear that who you're voting for mattered on a different level than it has in the past. Like, it wasn't just politics. It was, like, more meaningful than that to a lot of people. So definitely felt it. Was really actually grateful to be here, though, because I am someone who believes that you have to be able to have conversations with both sides. Like, 47% of people voted for Trump, 50% voted for Biden. That is a very close election. And for people to say, I'm not going to talk to them because they voted for Trump, or I'm not going to talk to them because they voted for Biden, our country can't survive that. And we have to be able to have respectful, meaningful conversations with people we disagree with. We need to get there. I don't think, I think that's going to take time, but half of the country can't just ignore the other half of the country. That's just not going to work.
It's interesting. I'm even thinking from my perspective of what it would be like to be young during this time. What is it like to grow up in such a divided or perceived divided country with people unfriending each other on Facebook because they're of different parties? What's it like to grow up in a time like that?
I mean, I don't totally remember anything different. Like, my freshman year of high school was the Trump versus Clinton election, which was also super divided and polarized. Not like this, but it was kind of the start of that polarization. And I'm someone who is involved in politics and the election and follows it. So some of this is in my life because I am interested in it and do try to stay informed about it. But social media, there's politics, like, people post on their stories, like, who you're voting for, things like that. I think it's everywhere I look right now, but that's also because I think about it all the time, like I said. So I don't know. I think my generation's more willing to speak up about their political beliefs. I think that's a big difference. We are being raised in a time when it is okay to ask people who you're voting for and to tell people who you're voting for. Like, that happened in this election. And for a lot of older generations, that's, like, disrespectful to even consider telling or asking who you're voting for. And on our generation, it's, like, normal, and it's part of how you get to know someone. It's like, oh yeah, this is my friend and they voted for, like, Biden or Trump, like whatever it is, and that changes the way that people view each other right now.
Would you say that when you meet someone who is also young and you find out that they voted for someone that you think is a little more problematic, do you see friends or yourself pulling away from that person? Is that the dynamic, or is it something where people are interested in hearing why?
I think it changes depending on which side of the argument you're on, because for a lot of people, voting for Trump meant voting against a lot of basic human rights. That's how they viewed this election. So for people who believe that and meet Trump supporters, are like, nah, I don't want to talk to you. Like, I don't believe that you're a good person, things like that. I think for a lot of people who supported Trump and not Biden, it's like, the media is blowing this out of proportions. Stop being brainwashed. That's like almost the other side, at least from what I've experienced again in my life. And so I think it depends on the person, I think, is what it comes down to. I think some people are like, we disagree on too much. I don't want to talk to you. I don't think we're going to be able to even respect each other because we disagree on some really basic things. I think that happens. And so people don't even try. Personally, I would love to have conversations with everyone I meet about why they're voting for who they're voting for and to try to understand the other side, because I believe so strongly in my beliefs that, like, how did you get there and how do you have like a completely different set of beliefs than I do? Like, not that it's wrong, but like, tell me about it. And I love having those conversations. I think it's important to have those conversations. Yes, there are some things that if I disagree with someone on it, we're probably not going to get very far in like how personally we connect and things like that, because that happens. Like, if you disagree on some really big things, that makes stuff difficult moving forward. But I think it's still important to understand where the other side is coming from. And that doesn't always happen right now. I think I'm in the minority for sure on that. And I've had friends who are like, how are you even talking to them? And I'm like, you have to. He's a good person. He's a person. He's a human. You have to respect them enough to have a conversation. And in that conversation, they disrespect you or disagree on something that is basic to who you are. Fine, move forward from that as you choose to, but at least be willing to have those conversations. I don't know. It's such a weird, even saying that, I'm like, wait, is that okay? And your every move right now is more meaningful, I think, than it has been in the past.
I think selfishly, from my perspective, I wish more people thought like you, because I do think part of what is getting us in trouble is the fact that people are going into bubbles willingly.
Yeah.
And I think that's been the biggest change. And you're right to say that 2016 was a little bit of a mass exodus, especially on social media, where people really, really started disconnecting from people that they mm-hmm. felt were on the other side. And it really was something that people clamped down into their news sources a little bit more. New organic news sources came out because of the fact that people felt like certain media sources weren't speaking to their values, their perspectives. Yeah, it's an interesting time, to say the least.
You can find something to validate your opinion anywhere that seems like fact. And if you're surrounding yourself with people and only talking and communicating with people who have the same beliefs as you, you're only going to see things and hear things that validate your opinion and your beliefs and the beliefs of those around you. That's what makes it seem black and white, right? That's why those conversations are just important to have, and why you can't just surround yourself by people who agree with you. And that's the problem people have with things like TikTok and Instagram. Like, they are built to show you exactly what you agree with. You can keep scrolling. Like, the algorithm on TikTok is supposed to show you things that you agree with and like to watch and keep going. So if you only watch things that are pro-Trump, or if you only watch things that are pro-Biden, that's what's going to continue to show up on your page. And you're going to be like, oh, everyone believes this. There is not an unbiased news media source anymore. I don't even know if there was, but it's important to like spend time, I think, really looking at multiple sources. Like, don't just look at Fox. Don't just look at CNN. Don't just look at New York Times. Like, read them all, because yeah. They'll all have different takes on the same situation. And it's important to understand, I think, those different perspectives. Again, it might not change your vote, but it's just important to be informed, not just be in an echo chamber, because no one learns in an echo chamber.
And you're right. I'm someone that reads a lot of different news sources just for the sake of what are other people absorbing right now, especially because my family itself and my extended family is so divided. Sometimes I'll look on news media on either side to kind of say, like, what is this person exposed to? So then, say, if I go to see them, I have at least some sense of preparation as to what is the language that I might hear. And even though we try to avoid politics, it doesn't always end up that way. In switching gears, you've been doing all of this during COVID.
Yes.
I remember last time our conversation focused a lot on the earlier days of COVID and where it led you into September. And now we're several months into the fall where we're getting a huge spike. What's life like for you now?
I guess for me, like, I'm working from home, so it didn't affect my work that much. That was going to happen anyways. Like, Vote.org works remotely. COVID didn't change that. So my work didn't change there. But my work in the community in Wilmington definitely had to navigate when to wear a mask, when is it okay to not wear a mask, basically never. But like, navigating that was interesting because people have different perspectives and it's almost like a norm when you enter a space, like, how are we treating COVID here? Which is so terrible, right? I can't even believe I'm saying that, but that's what it feels like when you enter a space right now. It's like, okay, are we all wearing masks all the time and are we hand sanitizing everything or are we just going to stay socially distanced and just stay outside? I don't know. It's completely different feelings and when you enter space, which is just, that's wrong because science says, like, wear a mask and do it always and protect everyone around you, but that's not what's happening right now. obviously, we're seeing the spikes and the numbers and things like that. So I think in my life, when I went downtown to engage with the community, it was always in person still. So that was my in-person interactions. Like, other than that, like, going to the grocery store and stuff, everyone wears masks and things like that. But it was a tricky, like, we're outside. We should have masks on. We're not really near each other. Some people aren't wearing masks. Do I wear a mask? Like, navigating that was really interesting. Again, I feel like it shouldn't even be a question, but that's what it feels like right now. And
the hard thing is meeting new people, too. Yeah. I imagine you're meeting a lot of new people, and you're like, I don't know this person.
Yeah.
Are they going to perceive me a certain way?
Yeah.
If I wear a mask too long, right, or not long enough?
Yes, and it's such a weird thing because, again, it shouldn't even be a question. We should just be wearing masks all the time, but it holds this extra meaning for whatever reason. It, like, says, oh, are you someone that really, like, believes COVID is, like, a terrible thing right now? Or is it like, no, it's fine. We're going to be okay. It's this such a weird social dynamic right now of what it means to wear a mask or not. That's definitely what it feels like right now. And I think other than that, like, how has COVID affected? I'm living with young people. So personally, within our group, it's felt less stressful because I'm not living with parents who are in the high-risk category. But now I'm with my parents again. So, like, last week I got tested and then tried to stay relatively quarantined to try to avoid that. So there's a different level of responsibility and, like, stress that comes with that. Like, seeing my parents again and living with people who are in the high-risk category, which, again, isn't necessarily fair. It's just because, like, you don't want to be part of the spread, period. It's easy when you don't have people immediately in your life that aren't going, like, don't have the potential to be really negatively impacted by it. So that's weird, too, because, again, like, you should never be contributing to the spread. When you know that there's a good chance that if anyone that you're living with got it, we'd be okay. Now I don't know because I'm living with parents again.
Well, let me ask you about that then. So leading up to a full holiday season, and I say full because for those outside of the States, we have Thanksgiving, and that very quickly rolls into Christmas time and Hanukkah and New Year's. So we have maybe about 6 weeks of festivities, and COVID has put this shadow over it. Mackenzie, how are you going to spend the holidays?
Right. Yeah, we still don't know yet. I mean, it's hard to say that we're not going to see our grandparents for Christmas when we have for years. And, like, we don't want them to celebrate Christmas by themselves. We also don't want to get them sick. Are we all going to get tested and then quarantine for 2 weeks, like, leading up to going to see them? Or are we just not going to see them? I still don't think we know. I will be home. I know that. I will be with my immediate family, like my mom, my dad, my sister. We're actually spending Thanksgiving in North Carolina, so they drove down here to see me, and so I'm just with them. But then, like, I'm going to Houston. I am living in Houston for the next portion of my gap year in January, but need to bring my car there now because I don't want to drive home to Connecticut to drive back to Houston. So I'm driving down next week with my dad to Houston to drop my car and things off at the house I'm staying at, and then flying back to Connecticut. So flying during COVID, I haven't done that yet. Not sure how I'm feeling about that. But when I get home, I'm going to have to quarantine and get tested. So there's that extra layer of, like, uncertainty and just stress with traveling and making sure that you're getting places safely. That's, like, the biggest thing that's been on my radar. And it's weird because, like, I'm going to Houston. I'm working with a program in Houston that's supposed to be in person. but numbers are spiking everywhere, and so they'll probably move online, and Houston might move into a lockdown, so I might be getting to a new place and be stuck in a house on my computer for the whole time, which that hasn't totally registered, but I'm like, I don't want to be stuck at home either, and so why not be stuck in a new place? I don't know. So that's been a lot of stress and uncertainty again, which knew was coming. It's just always like another slap in the face, like, yep, we gotta just roll with it again and not have a plan and be okay with that and just take what comes. So that's been like overshadowing all of this other holiday planning. That's like, I know I'm going home. That's all I know right now. And I know I'll be with my immediate family. We might go see my grandparents. We might not. Yeah, numbers are spiking and not even all college students are home yet, which that'll also be another spike, I'm sure, everywhere as people are leaving their college campuses and may or may not be bringing COVID home. So,
well, Mackenzie, thank you so much for being here with us today. And next time when we talk to you, you'll be living your Houston, Texas adventure.
Yes.
So yes, we'll get to hear a little bit more about that next time. This was episode 8 of our second season with Mackenzie Roller in the U.S. If you want to hear Mackenzie's original episode from season 1, find it on your favorite podcasting platform or our website, recordofchange.com. So next time, stay tuned for the next episode of Record of Change when we will listen to our end of season holiday special, where the Record of Change team will share a hot cup of cocoa together and discuss their impressions of season 2 and how their lives have shifted in the last season. Well, the cocoa is optional, but it will be fun, so stay tuned. If you like this episode or Record of Change in general, please share it with your networks and make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider. And to find out more about Record of Change, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or our website, recordofchange.com. This podcast is supported with and by the members of the Bosch Alumni Network, a community that brings together former and current fellows, grantees, and staff members of the Robert Bosch Stiftung and its partners. Thank you for listening.